So Ronald has written this excellent book that I can't recommend enough, Frank Costello, a novel. And it's a work of fiction, but it's kind of not a work of fiction. In fact, if I was going to recommend a book to somebody who wanted to get interested in the history of Frank Costello and maybe doesn't want to read something as dry as a lot of these kind of novels can, or the other books can be, I would recommend this because it's the research is amazing, and it's just such a good read. Ronald, why don't you tell us just a little bit about your background first, and then how you came to learn about Frank Costello and write this book?
All right, thanks. Yeah, please call me Ron. I'm a television producer, and I started many years ago at the Dick Cavett Show. I've done all sorts of things on as a TV producer, but I've also been writing. So I wrote a book called Cornermen, Great Boxing Trainers. That's a history of old-time boxing trainers from sort of the early part of the 20th century. And that actually, it turns out, helped me with Frank Costello, which I'll explain perhaps later. Then I got a job working as a writer and producer, interview producer on a docudrama about the history of the New York City Mafia. And I hadn't really known much about it before then. And then I got intensely interested in Frank Costello. Just one of these crazy things, like having something stuck to your finger and you can't quite get it off, you know. And then you think, you know, so I've written two previous novels as well as that nonfiction book. And I thought, okay, I'm going to write this novel about Frank Costello. And what interested me most was this decision that he made to testify in front of the Kefauver Commission, which in 1951, which proved to be really bad for him. And eventually, sort of, he was humiliated in public and sort of led to his being in prison. And I thought, well, why did he do that? That seemed like such an interesting decision, because many of the other top gangsters refused to testify, or they take the fifth, or they didn't. But because Costello, in addition to being essentially the acting head of the Genovese crime family, having succeeded Lucky Luciano, he was also in immense political power, right? He could appoint judges. He had control of who was the boss of of Tammany Hall. And he was hobnobbing with a congressman, said, you know, city politicians, judges. And he thought, well, all his life he wanted to be legitimate. So he began to conceive of himself as a legitimate person, right? And so he thought, well, I'll just speak to these senators. And it was a terrible decision, because I think that he had my sort of thesis. Is that he was an immigrant, and he wasn't educated. He's obviously extremely smart and extremely competent, but I don't think he really understood where he stood in society, and I don't think he understood how he was seen in society, and I don't think he understood who had the real power in America. And it was the establishment, it was the government, it was prosecutors, it was ultimately, you know, the people who could put him in jail. And the senators had nothing but disdain for him, and were interested mostly in they were, you know, they had a legitimate interest in exposing to the American public how incredibly powerful the mob was. There's nothing wrong with that. And they were interested in scoring political points, and they were interested in becoming stars on this brand new medium of television. And I think that when Frank agreed to testify, he didn't, but I don't think anyone understood the power of television. It was a new medium. A lot of people didn't have access to television. He didn't realize how powerful it would be, and it was very powerful. So it's one thing to be humiliated. Yeah, it's bad enough, but to be humiliated and to be laughed at on television is worse. And I thought, well, why did he do that? It seemed poignant to me. It seemed interesting to me, and it made him a fascinating character.
Absolutely. I think that's one of the reasons that I became interested in him too. It's just, he's a little different than your kind of run-of-the-mill gangster, I guess,
Oh
racketeer.
yeah,
And
yeah, yeah, yeah.
I definitely agree with you about the, I don't think anybody had an idea of the power of television yet.
No,
He learned
no.
the hard way, and it was such a spectacle at the time.
Yeah.
People don't realize, how many people were watching that. There wasn't anything else to do. It was, you know, it was, everybody was glued to the television watching that. And
they kept department stores in New York City open late because women who were the shoppers, it sounds very sexist, but that's how people thought. That's how the world worked in those days. They were at home watching TV rather than going out shopping. So they kept these big department stores like Baum would tell the state open late so that people could see it. And then people who didn't have a TV would go to movie theaters, and they didn't want to see the feature. They wanted to see the hearings. And, you know, it was very dramatic, right? And this whole world was being opened to the American public of this thing called the mafia, right? Because J. Edgar Hoover, as we know, was not really interested in prosecuting the mafia. You know, he didn't have the equipment to do it. There were no FBI agents who could speak Sicilian or Italian, so he had no way to infiltrate them. You know, you're not going to get these straight Joes going in and you know, pretending to be members of the mob. So it was a fantastically interesting moment. So in the novel, I try to trace backwards to see what led him to do it. And the stuff I found, what I discovered was that it was part of a pattern, because, you know, I used many sources. One of them was a really interesting memoir by George Wolfe, who was Frank Costello's attorney. And early in the book, and I use this quote, Costello testifies in front of a hearing, he finishes, and his lawyer says to him, "You love to testify, don't you?" And he did. He liked the attention. He was could be very good at it. And he liked to brag a bit when he did it, you know, about his legitimate friends, about his contacts. But of course, what he didn't realize is that there were a lot of things he really couldn't talk about, right? Like, where was the money coming from, Frank? And, you know, do you know Lucky Luciano? Do you know Al Capone? And there's another moment I couldn't believe that I did when I sort of stumbled on this, that he was accused of being basically in charge of heroin importation to New York City. And so he holds a press conference. This is the guy who is the head of the Judy Peace crime family. And he knew, because Frank Costello, beg your pardon, Al Capone in Chicago would talk to the media all the time, right? And that's not a good thing for a gangster to do, right? Because it makes you famous. You don't want to be famous. It's almost like poking your finger in the eye of the authorities. Nonetheless, he holds a press conference. And then he can't answer most of the questions. Is there a mafia? I can't say. Were you the biggest slot? Were you the slot machine king of New York? Well, I prefer not to say, you know. And so it's sort of ironic that he held a press conference, but he gave interviews, to Time Magazine, to Saturday Night, to Saturday Night Live, Saturday Evening Post, et cetera, et cetera. Because he liked to talk, and he thought he could explain himself, and he thought he was good at it. He was good at it, but he couldn't really sustain the scrutiny that he brought upon himself. And that's that yearning to be legitimate that sort of makes his story poignant, really.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the things that you do in the book that I think is really cool, you know, it is fiction, and you have to make up some dialogue, but anytime that there is, you know, Frank's actual words out there, which fortunately, because of all these interviews, there's a lot compared to you know, most of these guys. And, you know, there's footage of them. There's audio of his voice, which, you know, is just incredible. So it's really, there's a lot of stuff that's in this book that's actually his words. You know, you didn't have to make that up. But when it came time to start speaking in his voice, you know, sort of as the narrator of the story, how'd you go about that? And what made you want to do a fiction book instead of just, you know, like the run-of-the-mill life of Frank Costello?
Let me address the first part of that, because so everything that he says in public, right, when he's talking to a journalist, it's all from the historical record. So when I write about that press conference that I mentioned, I use his exact words that he said those words in public. It's unbelievable as it seems. He said all those words. Everything that takes place during his testimony is from the public record. And even in court, and even earlier in court, when he was a young man and he was arrested I use the court transcripts. So when you see him talking to a judge or talking to a congressman, or talking to a journalist, it's all his words. So when I decided to do this, the first thing I did was I read everything I could find, and then I spent a summer doing a timeline of his entire life. It's like 4 pages long. This is what happened. This is what happened to him. And I followed the timeline. So in a way, it's easier than writing a novel, just make up, which I've done, because you always know what's going to happen next, because Frank's going to do something else. But you have to decide what to leave out. And there's sort of an art to that a bit. So that I just wanted to say that. And now, how did I decide to tell it in his voice? Well, I thought that there were two great novels by serious writers about Frank Costello. So one is Billy Bathgate about the mob, rather. So take two. There are two serious novels about the mob written by very serious, very gifted writers. So one is Billy Bathgate by E.L. Doctorow, which is, I think, one of the best post-war American novels ever written. Everybody should read it. But don't read it before my book, because it's so good. You want to read my book first. It's really a masterpiece. And it is told in the voice of a young man who gets involved in Dutch Schultz's gang. So Dutch Schultz is the monster, and he really was a monster, right? And then you have a young man observations about Dutch Schultz, right? So it's always a bit removed. It's brilliant. And then there's William Kennedy's Legs, about Legs Diamond. And in that book, it's a fiction, and it's narrated by his attorney. So Legs Diamond is this guy who's getting shot. He's always going to get killed, blah, blah, blah. He's running from the law. And you see what his lawyer's impressions of him. So I thought, and that would be my natural inclination. You know, it's sort of like The Great Gatsby, right? You have Nick Carraway, the sensitive guy, then you have Gatsby over here. And he's fascinated with Gatsby, writes about Gatsby. So that was my initial inclination to do that. And I thought, well, I wanted this book to be different. So I said, I will speak in, I will have the chutzpah to speak in Frank Costello's voice. And that was, in a way, it was very liberating, right? Because if I was writing it in the third person or in a different character as an attorney or something, it sort of had to be like well written. Right. You know, I was an English major. I write essays. And so there's always a concern. You don't want cliches. You don't want ungrammatical sentences or anything like that. But if it's written in Frank Costello's voice, it's sort of liberating. It can be very colloquial. Do you know what I mean? You can.
Absolutely.
Because you're speaking his voice and you can say things that that you would never say, you know. And I thought that you would, you know, his attitude towards women, his attitude towards, you know, Jewish people or whatever, things that, I mean, I'm Jewish, but I would never say these things, right? I knew, because I wrote the book about boxing, I had interviewed many people who were very intelligent, but had grown up on the street in New York City. And so I kind of knew how they spoke. You know, I had spent a lot of time with a trainer who had trained Rocky Graziano and Raging Bull. And he grew up in Greenwich Village. So I spent a great deal of time with another trainer who had worked with Joe Louis and Benny Leonard, and they were all born about the same time as Frank. And this guy, the great trainer Ray Arcel, he grew up in East Harlem. He grew up in the Jewish section of East Harlem. So when Frank Costello in the book says, "Well, we called the Jews Christ killers," I got Ray Arcel told me that. He said, "Well, the Italian kids called us Christ killers." So I had those voices in my head. And then I have a friend who's a criminal defense attorney, and he has done a number of mob cases. So sometimes when he's in New York and he's going out to dinner with a defendant or whatever, I'll tag along. You know, so like dinner, I've had dinner at Rayo's, I've had dinner at these other places where these folks congregate. And so I got to hear how they thought about the world and how they spoke about the world, and how they spoke about other people. And how they spoke about law enforcement people, right? And I noticed a number of things. One of which was that they want to bring everyone down to their level, right? So their notion is everybody's a crook, right? you know, everybody's not a crook, but that's how they see the world. And, you know, and they loathe, they hate prosecutors, right? So I thought, well, he's going to hate Frank Hogan. He's going to hate Keith Over. He's going to, you know, and that was fun. And I thought that would be how he would feel if he were to try to tell the truth. So the idea of the novel is that Frank is old and he's narrating his life and he wants to tell the truth. Now, Costello before he died, he was going to do a memoir with Peter Maas, right? Peter Maas?
Yeah.
So Maas, who did the Fallaci papers, who would have done, you know, you couldn't think of anyone better to do this book, right, with Frank Costello. Then Costello died. But I read that Peter Maas said that all Frank wanted to talk about was, you know, how legitimate he was, the good things that he'd done. So I think if Frank had written, Frank wouldn't have been as forthcoming as Peter Maas would have wanted him to be. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I thought, well, this, because it's fiction, you ask me why I wrote fiction, I had the leeway in the book, I think you see him trying to say, he's like exposing all his lies. He's trying to tell the truth. He's trying to, and then he sort of fabricates a bit, you know, so he's trying and then he does it. And you think, oh, is this true? And you can tell he's being a little bit evasive, but it's an effort. I thought he was the sort of person who might really wish to make an effort to consider the truth about his life. And this is what it might have been like. So that's sort of the idea. But I think that the voice, it could only exist in a work of fiction, but I tried to be as consistent with the historical record as I was within my power.